Arcane Analysis is brought to you by BlizzPro.com, partnered with Legion by Lenovo and Intel. Follow them on Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook at Legion by Lenovo or visit LenovoGaming.com.
The portals are open. The refreshments are conjured. Settle down for Arcane Analysis.
Welcome to episode 10 of Arcane Analysis. Tonight I'm joined by my co-hosts Allie and Katie, and we're going to take a look at the recently added Legion invasions.
We'll also talk about a couple other things. The other thing that came recently was the
PvP brawls.
Which, have you guys checked them out? I only did one, but oh my goodness, it was kind of ridiculous.
I got in 3 matches for my weekly, and it was really cool. Nice to see people actually interacting in the battleground a lot more. Big bonus points.
Yeah, it definitely required a lot more communication instead of, oh my god, you suck at life, delete your character, get out of the battleground.
So true.
Well, and the twist that they have with each of these battlegrounds happened this past is that the Arathi Basin was just covered in snow. So think about, instead of it being in the middle of time as it normally is, now it's a winter. Well, what does that mean? All the lakes, the rivers were frozen over, so we didn't have to be dependent on, you know, a shaman for water walking or a death knight, something like that. So all these classes kind of had like the same opportunity to get to one place part of the map that maybe that was inaccessible for them to get to quickly before. And it cut down the fog of war that winter, like winter just shrouded the whole area. And it reduced visibility about 45 to 50 yards. So you weren't able to just sit at the top of Lumber Mill and call out like, hey, like, I see there are guys like coming towards us. Oh, I see, you know, the blacksmith's about to get attacked. It was just very much more of a visceral experience where all of a sudden you're being ganked and here's the enemy team that's just flooded on you and you're spamming in chat like, oh my gosh, send him reinforcements. A really kinetic, fun way to play.
It also, like in my experiences, you found of kind of interesting ways to set up your lookouts so that you would see them coming and get a little head start and head notice. So like Lumber Mill was the one that we caught all 3 games and helped us win because you could easily make it to Blacksmith and to, was it Farm for Horde?
Yeah, if you're on the Horde side, yeah, it's for Farm.
So it was easy to get to both of those too quickly. But you could sit near the stable side before the ramp up and you could catch them as they came up. Now you couldn't actually target them because you could see farther than you could actually attack people, which was kind of cool. But it gave you a little bit of heads up as they were poking up to try and see who was there. You could kind of count basis on numbers to see who might be coming and give a little heads up on the call. And you could do that for Farm and for Blacksmith as well. There's a couple places where you could kind of hide and watch them come in, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, like you were mentioning how the setup for usually the person that's defending the base or the sentry, they were changed from, instead of just standing on top of the flag, you might have a couple of people there, but you also had this person that was kind of like the Paul Revere, right? That was just sort of sitting on the ramp and it's like, oh my gosh, the Horde is, you know, to really stop them. And again, just get the chat filled with communication and not with good communication, some real teamwork and not just like, oh, surprise, you know, the stables got taken over. Oh man, I couldn't type. I was too busy getting, you know, killed. So just again, really, really great way to kind of spark a like positive play in the community.
It was definitely an interesting take on it too. With little changes in the terrain, it made it a little more interesting. And you're kind of thrown off of, oh, that person's on a roof. How'd they get up there? Oh, wait, there's a ramp of snow. Of course, that's how they got up there. And a couple other things of people hiding around, again, the snowbanks and stuff like that. The lighting was really cool. The torches and stuff that were kind of scattered about made some really cool lighting changes, especially with the snow. it just made it a little bit more interesting, more fun. I had a great experience. I won as Horde for all three of mine. I'm not sure how about how you two experienced the brawls.
I feel like I kind of missed out because I only did the one and then I completely forgot because I was doing other stuff and getting ready to go out of town. But I also got stuck babysitting farm with a warlock for the entire match. No. So,
but you're a warlock with a pet. It totally works, right?
Actually, it worked really well because, like, they had their portals so they could keep track from Lumber Mill to farm, and then I was going down the other side and, like, scouting and coming back. And, yeah, we just sat and babysat that side, but we kept it defended, so that was kind of nice.
We almost actually five-capped in one of our matches, which was kind of... It was incredibly tricky because once you got all the five-cap and you were definitely... pushing them back, it was hard to be like, oh, hey, they're, you know, here. They could skirt around you. As before, you could just pretty much go up to their graveyard and just farm them at that point. But they were able to get around you, and so they back capped on one of us. So we had to, you know, go back into just turtling on three.
Yeah, that's kind of what we ended up doing. Like, we were getting our teeth kicked in until people actually started realizing what you needed to do to take them back and keep them. And then we were down by like 500 and then caught up and camped it all and won.
Well, I think one of the great things about these PvP brawls where it does have almost like these effects is that enable the play to be a little bit different is that it creates this opportunity for flexibility in tactical decisions, right? Because it's, I mean, think about how long Borsong Gulch and Arathi Basin and all these other battlegrounds have been in the game. It's been forever. Like, at this point, you know the drill. It's almost second nature when you go into a battleground and it becomes, you know, a route thing that you do. And pretty much the only, I don't want to say the only exciting thing, but the thing that changes each time is, you know, maybe how you duel in combat with the other team. But the strategy itself is pretty much the same. But with, you know, AB, all of a sudden, it's not just about the positioning of your sentries, but it's also, like you were mentioning before, it's like, how do you keep people off of your bases? A lot more, like, there's always sort of fighting in the roads, which is sort of typically kind of bad battleground PvP, but it, but with some of the changes to the terrain, it allowed... Yeah, I think in my games, there was some less of that due to team communication, but there are definitely times where if you were sending out like a small sort of group to take over a point, that they would get waylaid on the way. And then that sort of became like the intimate moment of fighting the other team. And those battles, I don't really think I'll ever forget. Like, I just loved, we had like a stealth team. So as a feral druid, we rolled in stealth deep, you know, and we ended up running into, what was it? It was basically like a nice arena team comp that they had, that they were sending out to sort of survey like what the next move was going to be for them. And so we basically just had a 3v3 on the way to the blacksmith, and it was just a real experience. Like, again, being able to kind of use the snowy terrain for ways to line of sight the enemy that didn't really exist otherwise. Like, oftentimes fighting in the roads, there isn't a lot to line of sight from, so you're pretty much like free casting and not getting disrupted. But it was like, with these mounds of snow, all of a sudden this caster can't hit me, not just because of the reduced visibility, but it's just like, you can just sort of hide, you could just turn just right behind one and stop that cast from hitting you. And it was just, again, just a fun experience.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those where I'm looking forward to the next one, and
I'm less busy now, so I can take it all in. Yay!
But it's just, even just with that one, I'm even more jazzed about the next ones that are going to be coming. And I don't even know what this week's is, if there is one.
It hasn't been shown just yet. Actually, I looked with anticipation. So,
do we know if they're going to be weekly or if they're going to be bi-weekly? Or...
I heard from a little bird that they're supposed to be weekly. They're supposed to basically have the same rotation as the brawls do in Hearthstone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes sense. So it'll be a while before we see a repeat, but eventually we will, before they, you know,
there's only so many battlegrounds.
Certainly.
Because that's one of the big things, is that, like, the brawls are really cool, but it's also, they're limited by, well, this is just a play on existing battlegrounds, so we've only got however many there are, like, 12? Is it even that many?
Are there that many? One, two. No, either way. But, I mean, the other side is if you're going to do something like the AB, where the snow and the change in terrain and everything like that, you still have to have all the graphics and level designers to go through and retune everything. It's not, you know, it takes time. And so it's not something that I can really, I say, truly devote a lot of time to, because otherwise at that point you might as well make a new battleground, of course, right?
Yeah.
To be fair, Ian Hazzikostas did say that they're not really. He actually previously did kind of the. He was like, I guarantee you it's not going to be balanced. So it does take time from a level designer's perspective, you know, or just, you know, the game design perspective to implement these sort of changes. Like you were saying, it's a lot of art changes. You know, you got to put in these models, you have to figure out where, you know, things are going to go, but it's at least they don't have to go through the extra step of trying to tune the battlegrounds. It's just more of like an emphasis on, you know, is it fun?
Yeah.
And the disruption of balance is what makes it fun. It's a little bit more chaotic. So as long as it's not overwhelming, I think that they're going to be very successful.
That is true. That's just a nice way to kind of shake things up, kind of like the arenas and stuff outside in the world right now for the world quests. Each of them has kind of like a little different thing to them that makes them a little interesting. Cool idea.
It's definitely something that we can appreciate, that PvP is still there and they're not forgotten. They're still in their hearts. So speaking of varying content and changing existing areas, we've got Legion Invasions now, which is sending zones from time to time, all in a tizzy.
Yeah, so what's happening is that the Sentinex, which is that giant spaceship, basically opening up portals throughout the Broken Shore, and it's always, and it'll choose a zone to sort of say, like, and the invasion's happening here. It's a lot like the pre-launch event for the expansion, where these portals are sort of opening up and demons are just flooding the zone. And what they've added to 7.2 on top of that idea is there's, you know, these quests that you can do. And by these quests, I mean, there's a quest that's like, hey, like, go and purge the Legion from that zone. And the Legion will stay in a zone for 6 hours, and that's randomly selected. And when you get there, you'll basically get about like 4 world quests. I think it's not just about, you will get 4 world quests that signify like, hey, like, you need to finish, you know, these 4. And once you do, you've quote unquote kind of like cleared the Legion from those areas, and you go back, you turn in your quest to Maeve on the Broken Shore, and before you do that, you get, once you complete the 4 in that 6-hour time period, you get sent on a scenario where you queue up with a couple of other people, and you basically are put in like this task mission to get rid of the Legion in that scenario. And then once you finish that, you turn in a quest, get an AP, get some cool items. It's good stuff.
Yeah, one of the cool things I discovered today is that even though the invasion lasts for 6 hours, if you're already in the zone doing the things, you can finish the invasion and go do the scenario. I think it's up to 30 minutes afterwards, so I discovered that today, cool. Which was super, super nice, because they end pretty much right when I get off work. So yeah, I made the mad dash.
Especially the first day of invasions, it was right in the middle of the work day, at least for Pacific time. And I think that rightfully made the community kind of upset that they weren't able to access this content that was supposed to be brand new, because, well, you're still at work, so when you're working an 8-hour day and your 6-hour time period is right in the middle of the workday, doesn't work out so well. But it seems like the developers have made a conscious effort to shift it to a later time, so it's more accessible.
A little bit. The big thing is that
when it came.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The big outcry that came was when the next day, when the next invasion came out, it was actually during the middle of the Eastern Coast work day, like the typical. So not only could the East Coast people not do it, but it was active and practically gone before the Pacific Coast people even got into it. And so it was just kind of like, really, you couldn't have timed this any better. And that's when the big outcry really happened.
Yeah, the other thing is that, like, the whole point of it being such an issue, like, I appreciate the randomness of it, because you never know what you're going to get or when, and that's fine if you're just kind of out there for content, because it's not like we're going to have invasions for, you know, a couple of weeks and then they're going to be gone again, like the opening process for the launch of Legion. Like, we're going to have these for months, so to not get worn out and irritated with them and constantly be interrupted, I appreciate that, but having to complete the scenarios for each zone to get flying could take months if you're timed poorly, or, you know, work a steady job or have stuff to do. It's one of those things that, like, timing it right, because I've only done 3 of the invasions since they started, and 2 out of the 3 were Azuna. So that kind of sucks. But yeah, since they took it out of the achievement for flying, we're good to go now, and now it doesn't really matter, because it's not artificially gating you behind something as
exactly
strictly anymore. So that's cool.
And sometimes that randomness is okay. Like you were mentioning, it's like, okay, well, it's not like every day it's going to be a different invasion. But again, the issue was that even outside of the randomness, now you're trying to align it with the correct time. So it was good that Blizzard they determined to not make that part of the Pathfinder. But I could see in the future, if they created like a better timing for it, that they could do something like that in the future, where that achievement would add up to a bigger sort of prize.
I'd be okay with that. I guess I really like the randomness to it, because you don't, you know, it is the Legion, we're invading, they're trying to catch you off guard, and they reiterate that a couple times throughout the scenarios, especially the one out in Stormheim. Odin's there and, you know, telepathically communicates with you in some strange, weird way that the World of Warcraft does. But you finish and do all these things and you realize, oh, wait, you know, this was just a distraction for their real goal over here. And, you know, that's kind of communicated in the other ones that I've done, where they're trying to really catch you off guard, really catch the citizens of the Broken Isles who have pushed back against the Legion. Okay, they realize, oh, we've been pushed back, we need to really strike hard, and what better way to do that than try and get behind enemy lines and kind of catch them off guard.
Well, so exactly what you
said, the randomness.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just like, I was just so excited what you were saying. I really wanted to just add, but it's exactly what you're saying, which is that randomness adds to the fun to it, and it also adds to kind of the realism of it. I think that if it was sort of like scheduled, it's like, oh, we're the Legion, and we're gonna go ahead and invade
at 10 a.m. every single day.
Like an appointment, right? Like, it's not an appointment. It's right. A tactical maneuver.
I don't know if you guys read the Dark Legacy comic. I know it posts on MMO Champion and a few other places. But
I don't
read them all, but they're always really... They're really good World of Warcraft social commentary when big things like this pop up. And so it's a conversation of, like, Kil'jaeden talking to Sargeras, and he's like, when are we going to attack? We're going to attack them while they're at work. And, like, the last frame is them pop, like, the player characters from the comic being very, very angry because that was just the wrong thing to slight them. The Legion has gone too far, and it was just perfect.
Yes, that was one of my favorites of recent, but it was, yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing to add in the whole thing, and the world quests that they throw in kind of shake things up. My only, My only dislike is that if, like, I was trying to finish up my emissary on my paladin before raid for my mage, and so that I have everything done, and I log in, and there's the, you know, I get three of the world quests done for Stormheim, and I'm getting this last one done, and, you know, it popped up, and I couldn't actually finish that one. And, of course, it's invasion. My paladin's my alt. I immediately swap over to my mage to get the invasion done, and I go back, and I'm like, I don't have enough time between this and now to get my stuff done for my paladin, so I just left. And I'm not even sure if that emissary can be handed in anymore. It's just kind of like one of those like disheartening things of like, oh great, you know, I was just about to finish this world quest, the invasion started, I can't finish it, I can't hand it in, and you know.
Well, that kind of sucks. I know you can do the emissary at the same time that the invasion's going, because they count for both, because I've done that in Azuna.
Mm-hmm.
So you I was actually doing a warden's one, so I'm not sure.
That would make more sense. Because, yeah, they don't count for the... I think the, boss dudes count for the wardens. Or they give you warden's rep, but it might not count for the warden's emissary. But I know, like, the zone emissary double dips with the invasions, which is nice.
Ah, gotcha.
But that would be kind of annoying if it's inconsistent.
One kill left to do, and as I was killing it, the invasion started, progress was wiped, and I'm like,
that's I feel like that might be kind of a bug or something.
Well, I mean, all the world quests that are in the zone disappear during the invasion. Right. Replaced with ones, and you can see the art detail is just completely changed. It's like they re-instance over, you know, the zone, because as I said, the art is different. They add like buildings and spikes and new patrols and things like that. And
yeah,
it's
I'm
just kinda
guessing
weird.
It's probably part of the like sharding technology, the same kind of thing that they did for for the first invasions. You know, you were in a group with people when you zoned into the zone, but there were multiple instances of that zone than there normally are.
Certainly. So that's my only gripe, honestly. Since they've changed the Pathfinder stuff, I like them. They're fun. They get a lot of nether shard crystal. Nether shards? Nether
they
shard
are
crystals.
Lucrative, that's for sure.
Can't remember. So that was kind of cool to...
Nether shards is the new currency.
Yes, another currency.
Yay, another currency. I'm okay with it because it's the same one as it was from the launch event.
Right.
So at least it wasn't like another one. Yes.
I was like, oh, hey, I have some nether shards. Oh, I have some more. Because it was nice when I was trying the challenges at the Mage Tower. I was like, I haven't farmed nether shards. Oh, wait, I have 3,000 left over from the event. Cool, I guess I'm good.
Nice. Did you manage to finish that one?
I got really close, but I ended up giving up. I had other things to do, and so I'll get it next time. No big deal.
Yeah, I jumped into the fire one once and swiftly got my butt kicked, and it's like... Yeah,
I probably spent about 1,000 or 1,500 gold on repairs in my attempts. The hardest part was, as a mage, one of our major cooldowns is, of course, Time Warp, and they don't reset your debuffs after you fail. So
I think they fixed it so it does now.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, I think I heard that on like the last day that they fixed it so that your major cooldowns, yeah. I remember seeing somebody say it somewhere, but I also could totally be imagining things, so don't quote me on that one. But yeah, I'm a bad mage. I'm bad at solo content, so I'm either gonna have to wait to cheese it a little bit or probably sink some time that I just really don't have, because they really are on par with that level of skill command that at some point where it's like I'm only so good, but a lot of it's just going to be like practice and memorization, because that's how I did the green fire thing for the warlock, because I did that when it was still hard, so I have the title on her. But
nice.
It took me many, many hours. I want to say like 16 hours worth of attempts over several nights before I finally got it. Yeah. And it was a lot of trial and error because I wasn't used to having well, I wasn't used to playing a warlock. Like, I had a level warlock that I cheesed through dungeons, but I never actually did, like, in-game content with her, but I leveled her up and got her LFR gear just so I could go do the green fire and get the thing for a tune that I still don't play. I wanted the special item and the special title and the cool green fire. So I went through all this really stupid, crazy effort to go do it, but it was interesting, and I appreciate the care that they put into it of, like, you really need to know how to manage your pets. And it just made me respect, like, demo warlocks and really good hunters a lot more of, like, if you really need it, there's a lot more than just, like, sick the pet on the thing and do the stuff and win. So, but also reinforce that I like being a fire mage and not a destro warlock.
Yeah, I know for the feral one, we fight the imp mother, and she has this gigantic shield that basically just makes her for a long time until you kill these adds that constantly are spawning, and just a lot of management of your interrupts. You need to know when you need a stun or root, and it's a good challenge. I'm very pleased that the designers took, you know, they decided to that it was okay to make a challenge difficult, and that not everyone's gonna, that people aren't going to just be able to one-shot it on the first attempt, that it's going to be something that you work up towards, and not even necessarily a gear check. It's more of an actual, like, can you play your class to the most of its ability? And I'm still learning how Feral Druid, and it's just a really great way to gauge, you know. And plus, Ghost of the Pride Mother, which is the artifact appearance for that, is by hands down the best looking artifact appearance. So really excited to hopefully wrap that up at some point soon.
Yeah, the one for Frost is pretty good. I like the PvP skin, so I wasn't too picky about it. But right now it's just kind of more of like a status symbol, and a little bit won't matter too much. But if I can get it the next time around, I'll definitely wear that for a little bit. I'll have to change around my transmog, of course.
Of course, yeah. Like, I'll want to get it. I just don't have time to devote to it right now, so I'll probably wait for next time or the time after. But yeah, having that prestige of, like, I'm going to get the thing before Tomb is out is definitely kind of a goal, even though I know I'm bad.
Yeah, it's definitely a goal. We'll see if it happens or not.
Well, supposedly it's tuned for...
It's tuned for... What was it? Heroic Tomb or normal?
Yeah, I think
tomb?
Heroic Tomb of Sargeras gear, so, yeah. You know, another, what, like 15, 20 item levels? On top of what people already have right now?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say it's pretty hard as an 880 feral. It was not easy.
Yeah.
That's gonna be a little bit different.
I went in as a 902 mage, and it, because the fire one is the imp mother too, and, like, I can pull off my cooldowns and make a big dent in her, but I've only got one very, very long interrupt, and the rest of it is run around, shield, blink. It's avoid the damage as much as possible, mm-hmm. while also getting the things down, so definitely a lot of resource management, cooldown management. But like I said, I only went in once just to kind of take a look.
Yeah, I told myself I was going to go in once and just take a look, and then I went in 2, 3, 4, probably 20 times. I
you
lost
indulged.
Count.
You I indulged did. More than I did. I went in, I was like, like the first attempt, I just, like, basically got one shot, and I was like, whoa, okay, I'm going to, like, look at a tutorial. Okay, there aren't really any guides out right now. People that are complaining, like, you just got lucky, bro. And then I was like, I'll try it one more time. And then I was like, nope, I'm still bad. Even if you kind of know the fight and what you need to do, it's I'm not there yet.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the class challenges, the towers are interesting. It's also nice to see that we can have two up at least for a little bit at a time. Did you guys do much with the Nether Disruptor one? Because I was looking at the loot tables and I was like, I think I'm good.
I didn't even know how to activate that. And I know that's just me being a bit lazy and not looking up at WoWhead and other...
I had to ask someone because I wasn't paying attention, because I figured you had to, like, kill something to loot one. You actually just buy the key off the vendor that has the... pieces of gear. It's the, like, top, the right column from the little mage gal that's standing there next to the ethereal.
Oh.
It's 250 nether shards, and then it summons, like, an elite with, like, 50 million health or something like that, and then it drops a bunch of nether shards, and you can get more of the gear things. I forget what they're called.
Gotcha. Yeah, the tokens, the Dauntless tokens.
Dauntless, yeah, the Dauntless tokens.
There's something else. Now, here's something that a couple people in Discord channel of mine, or friends, brought up. They have tokens for everything else but relic slots. Now, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know a lot of people are having issues getting proper relics. And part of that goes along because some of the traits they benefit are, like, you know, quote unquote garbage. I mean, they're not great for DPS. And I know for mages, some of those traits are worth three to four item levels of on your weapon itself, not just the item itself. So that can be
tank ones are really
levels.
Bad too, because I know like some of the best ones come out of Emerald Nightmare, and the ones out of Nightwell are kind of useless to certain tanks or all of the tanks.
Yeah.
So that's kind of depressing. Yeah, it would be really nice to have relics on there, actually. I didn't even, like, I haven't really looked at the gear. I'm like, eh, this is all item level below me. I'm K. I'm not going to spend any, like, this will be great for my ults that, you know, need to gear up. But yeah, I didn't. Having some randomly generated relics would be really, really nice, because that's where a lot of your, like, really big item level boosts come from, in terms of, like, if you're caught up on your artifact power and knowledge and everything, and if you at least on a comparable level there, like, you've got all of your baseline power, but the relics really bump
it
up.
There's a big point.
And there's just so, like, there's so many, but there's so few that are decent, and it's so hard to, like, farm to get some of them to drop.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my friends who was a tank, as you mentioned, his best relic was actually from Halls of Valor. So he was trying to get like plus 14, plus 15 keys for that, and just to run it and try and get that relic. Like, you shouldn't have to do that as a raider, because the relics, you know, don't match up or don't give optimal. I mean, there's something to be said between optimal and suboptimal, but, you know, for some of them, like the traits that I'm looking at, I'm like, you know, why do I want plus 15% crit chance on Blizzard when I could have a cooldown reduction for Icy Veins or an increased damage for Ice Lance? I mean, like, those things are just night and day, the damage output that they do. And it's just something to keep in mind that when you look at what traits the relics apply, you need to be careful about which ones they do rather than just giving them an arbitrary number.
Right, and that's one of the things I'm super disappointed with when they decided to make the change about having the second trait on the relics be available so that they were, you know, guaranteed to be throughput, because it closes that stupid annoying RNG gap. But I can see how it could also create a huge power deficiency between people that have been playing for a while and people that haven't. So I can kind of see both sides to, you know, that design dilemma. But yeah, relics are a bit of a sore spot, I know, for a lot of people, and it's kind of a shame because they're a really neat idea, because it's like the new gem. And it would also be really good if, you know, crafters could craft like really high level ones, because even if you throw all of the fell 4D dust thing. I forgot what it's called. Yes. Even if you throw a lot of obliterum at them, you can still only get so high, and it's still a big chunk less than what you can get out of, you know, like, raiding content and group content. So there's just not a lot of ways to close the gaps there without incessantly grinding, and that seems counterintuitive to, you know, the fun of getting new gear.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, like, 1 week in raid, we went through and cleared normal Nighthold. We didn't see a single relic drop. And that's tough, especially when relics are such a huge portion of your damage. I mean, seeing just, you know, 5 item levels on a weapon is so much stats that it's just impressive. And so not to see a single relic drop over, what, 10 bosses is just kind of a little upsetting, disheartening to say the least. Especially when they are so coveted and there's so many of them. You have frost, fire, shadow, arcane, life, iron, holy, blood, fell, shadow. It just, there's so many different options. It's not like you can just plug and play, like, oh, a relic drops. Oh, it has a trait that I like. Oh, it's not the right socket type. Or, you know, it just, with so many variables, I think it was a cool idea. They just kind of took it a little bit too far. And I'm glad that they reined in the second trait thing. Because, as you said, like, getting the perfect relic would just be a huge power spike just due to how the traits interact. And we'd again get into this situation where, what's better, the item level or the trait or the stats or this and that? And we already have issues with that, so why would we, you know, why would we want to have more of that, I guess? That's my issue. I've had to actually go down in trait and relic item levels just because the trait was so much better, and that just felt weird.
Yeah, I've got one set in my bags right now that I need to go sim because it's like 15 item levels below one of the ones that I have right now, but it's a way better trait. But I think I just have one of the like kind of mediocre ones that it would have to be at least a 15 or 20 level item level gain to not be better. So I just haven't had time to look at it. So I just kind of look at it in my bags like, Decisions. It's almost nice part about the mage. It's one of those that feels super weird again, almost like as annoying as Reforging was. Because it's not one of those that is like always just really black and white. Because some of them sound okay. But at least for me anyway, because a lot of the Fire Mage ones are just varying kinds of crit for certain things. So it's like, I've got crit, and crit, or some crit. Well, crit.
Sounds perfect.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, luckily for you playing a mage, I know Altered Time has a nice spreadsheet that gives you a good reference. So it tells you whether the trait or the weapon, the end weapon eye level change that you're going to see from changing out those traits are better. It's just a general rule of thumb, but it provides a good enough insight that I'm like, well, you know, that one's giving plus, you know, two item levels, and this one has a better stat. So, you know, look at this chart. This one has the better stat, so I'll take that instead. So, something to look at for you.
Yeah, it's a big document. There's a lot to go through, and again, I have certainly. I have it open right now, and I just haven't gone through it. I got down to looking at artifact traits, and that was about it. Which I think I just got 42, and I'm halfway to 43, so yay!
Woohoo!
All the APs everywhere. Which isn't too bad for me.
Yeah, AP.
Katie chiming in with the APs. Yeah, I don't know. Is there... I think that's kind of it for right now, other than our awesome listener email that I'm super tickled by for very major reasons.
Oh, I guess so. We never really talked about calling down the sentinel. Sure.
Oh, that's right. The keys. God, I have like 30 of those things in my bags right now, and I don't know what to do with them.
Oh, yeah. No, just invite a party. Basically, it's just like if it played a deal. By the way, totally awesome game. It's almost like being able to sort of call down like the treasure when you get the special key to go into the treasure and goblin area. It's like, hey, guys, all right, you get a special item. Now you can call on the lead. Like, now you're calling on the Legion to open up portals in front of you, and these big elites like storm out, and you just go ahead and massacre them, loot all their nether shards, and turn it in for items, and they're pretty cool. And so what KTJ and I were just talking about are those keys. They're called the Sentinax beacons, and like we were saying, it's basically the Sentinax is in your area, and it's like, oh shoot, beam down some more dudes, and you go ahead and just slay a bunch of things, and it's just been really fun to do that on my realm, at least. Like, I know in the evening that there'll just be people from all over the server that come into one area, and they just keep, you know, just everyone just pops down beacons, so you just have hordes of enemies swarm you, and it's pretty fun.
Ooh, you might be able to answer a question for me. Have you seen the gathering beacons? I have a couple of those, too.
Yeah, I actually called...
Do you have to be a gatherer to use those?
Hmm?
I said, do you have to be a gatherer to use those? Because I have a few, but I'm not a gatherer on my mage, so.
Oh, I don't know. Like, I don't think, like, to be fair, like, my character has herbalism. So,
I like to pick flowers.
So, I know I've just been able to use them. I haven't really, like, tried to figure out if other people can use them or not.
Yeah, I'll have to test that out, because, yeah, I don't know. I'm behind, as usual. Months behind. It's kind of my MO, but it's okay.
The one thing I will have to say that I'm not... So it's really cool when you can call down a bunch of... What I'm not a big fan of is... And, you know, like, right now, like, anyone can tag your stuff, which is cool, and then you'll all be able to group loot it. It makes for a really fun kind of thing. But if the other faction tags your stuff, it's tagged to their faction. And so you can waste a beacon and have someone just ninja your stuff, and that's really not fun. Or it's not fun when there's a group of, and mind you, I'm on a PvE server, so I can't just, you know, get rid of these people. Otherwise, I'd be shanking them pretty hard. But anyone can just steal your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to kind of be a persistent problem, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it has to be. I don't understand. Like, the designers can't make it where the person who opens the portal has, you know, at least, like, it's faction, it's tagged to whatever their faction is. Like, I don't see why it needs to be this thing where it's like, oh, anyone can attack these mobs that you specifically have summoned.
Yeah, I think the disruptor beacons are like that, if the Wowhead comments are accurate. But again, I'm totally not super sure about that. I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things that, like, I've accepted the fate of people are going to steal stuff.
But yeah, but it's not good, like, when you're... Because these places, like, where you can do it, you can only do it under where it's flying in that zone. So you're just, again, a bunch of people are just going to be in the server. Just has a lot of, you know, like, for me, if it's like I'm Alliance, so if they're just a bunch of Horde people, they're all clustered under the Syntax because they're not going to be anywhere else in the zone because they're farming this stuff, and you only have like 5 Alliance people and they're like 50 of them, you're probably not going to be able to really truly tag anything.
Yeah, that makes it kind of hard.
Which is a thing that I've run into. Otherwise, it's like if it happened one time,
no big deal, but if it happens
another
lot,
time,
yeah.
But when it happens often, it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's unless they make it so if it's, you know, like the named mobs or the quest mobs that are faction shared, it's one of those that, like, it's always going to be there and a struggle that you're gonna have to acknowledge of, like, well, I'm gonna have to fight with them to be tagging faster, or take my ball and go elsewhere, or you know, try and server hop is the only other option. So it's one of those, like, I don't like it, but I've accepted it as an annoyance, I think, especially because it's just not as bad on a PvE server as it was in the past on a PvP server, because but I was always on the, like, minority faction, so I got curb stomped a lot. I just kind of sucked it up and left.
It's been better than it has, I mean, with allowing multiple people to tag the same mobs. It's not like you're necessarily fighting them directly.
Yeah, it's not as bad as, like, Timeless Isle was, I don't think.
Yeah, certainly. So it's improvement. I think I agree that the faction thing is probably proper, so that you're not sharing across faction for typical things. It's still frustrating. It's something I had issues with. There are a couple of world quests today where I was fighting some Alliance for mobs, and that's just kind of the nature of the beast, unfortunately. And definitely, like, if your beacon or whatever is being camped by the Alliance, we'll move to another one. If they follow you, then that's their problem. Unfortunately, it's an MMO and people are jerks.
Yeah, they tend to be. Speaking of, like, other faction, though, I have, like, little tinfoil theories going for, like, why they changed the name of the people of opposite factions, but I can't, like, put my thumb on it. I don't know.
What's your theory?
being able to either cross group or communicate in some faction, or it's gonna set up for like a very Horde versus Alliance focused thing where like being able to visually call out you know what faction is yours and what faction's not. Because, like, it's always the most annoying thing is, like, oh, hey, there's a Pandaren. Is it a Horde Pandaren or Alliance Pandaren? I can't tell. So, I don't know. I feel like after so many years, why now? It's got to be setting up for something. I just don't know, like, what or when.
Well, we got to come together to fight the Legion. Like, I mean, well, think about World Three, you have the Horde, which wasn't the Horde at the time, like the orcs and the Tauren and a couple of trolls that they had entered Kalimdor, I believe, and you know they were fighting you know night elves. They're kind of cleaving their way through the forests, and you know, of course, the night elves were very upset with that. And at some point the when the Legion is attacking, Archimond has invaded Azeroth, and they fight at Mount Hyjal. And when I say they, it's no longer orcs versus humans. It's no longer orcs versus night elves. All these races that were previously, you know, had a lot of beef with each other came together to fight off the Legion. And so it's possible that we will see the Horde and the Alliance come together as they did in the days of old, fight the threat of the Legion. Because again, Archimond was part of that Legion, the first Legion assault. So I think that's very possible that we will see something like that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty solid. Starting to run a little long, so I do definitely want to get to Alessandra's email about the Mage Cakes, which I will just read that one off because it's kind of funny. I'm sure other people can develop their fun little theories. So with the exception of the Blood Elves and Suramar citizens who became slender, refined, and delicate from a diet of magic over thousands of years, what would happen to a human or gnome mage living on a steady diet of mage food for 50 decades or more? What about raiders downing warlock health stones like candy?
So the first thing I'm going to say, not all foods. So if we're just going to just talk about humans and gnomes for this. There's even a lot of diversity within the human race that we have here on Earth, where how fat gets stored in the body differs. And it's just, if you have a group of people that are genetically predisposed to being able to down mage cakes, I mean, it's possible that they won't carry like the same way that we would carry fat, maybe within our systems. Like you'll even see this with tribes that we have here, where a specific diet that they have will render them the most healthy, and then when they try to turn to a diet that's European or Americanized, that they will start to store a lot of fat because the body doesn't know how to use those nutrients for energy. So I think it's very possible that that's why we can still see humans and gnomes kind of being kind of, you know, they're still slender and they're still getting a lot of energy, and they're able to do these big heroic things that we see in World of Warcraft, where they're, you know, they're not encumbered by their diet, or they're not, you know, like a sugar overload and, you know, spike in energy and then immediately dip down. So I think it's kind of viable that they can do that. And also, I know in this email, it's like we're pretty much just talking about, you know, like, hey, like pretty much all they're eating are kind of mage cakes. Well, think about all those cool savage feasts that we've had in the past, right? I think that as a raider, you kind of have a balanced diet, you know?
Yeah, as a raider, you're gonna have some cake, you're gonna have some fish, you're gonna have some meat, maybe throw some veggies in there somewhere. I don't know.
And lots of exercise. Think about all the running around in these, you know, like tons of running around. Like we're using our body, you know, cast stuff. We're using our bodies to, you know, come out swinging and hit, you know, these big bad bosses. So I think that it's probably a pretty good diet. Like you probably need all those calories, so you're not, so you have, you know, again, just boundless energy to go forth and conquer, right?
And just kind of going outside of the realm of World of Warcraft and other things, going to one of the big scenes is the that I can think of is in Lord of the Rings with the Lambis bread. When they're leaving, this is, oh, well, you know, just a small bite will fill the stomach of a grown man. And, you know, the hobbits turn to her, how many, and ask, how many did you eat? And says, oh, I had three or something like that. And, you know, they kind of giggle, and that's a, kind of like a funny scene of it. But, you know, magical things not necessarily can be explained by anything. So maybe it's just, it gives you just enough energy and then dissipates or something, or who knows. This is kind of a fun little thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like this idea, like, so the mage cake, I mean, it's a cake we're used to, you know, it's like, okay, well, we've, you know, most listeners, I hope, have had cake before, so we're sort of aware of what the consistency is and sort of what it does, but it's very possible that mage cakes just have different properties, like you were mentioning with the Lambis bread.
I mean, they used to change as you leveled up, because they were mana buns and mana rolls and
I think they
mana
still
pies. Do they?
Yeah.
I think so.
And streusels.
I remember I was getting...
Mana streusels. Those were my favorite. I loved the little icon for it, because it looked like a little braided croissant.
It did. That was really fun.
Alrighty, I think that'll do us for this week. Thank you guys for listening, and of course you can find us on Twitter at Arcane Analysis. You can find us at warcraft.blizzpro.com for the main feed and the show notes, and you can always email us. Of course, we love to discuss the ideas that you guys have, and that's at arcana@blizzpro.com. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.